Well, it sure is, and our special guest will be back here with us in a second, Lon Milo Duquette. He's been on the program before, noted author. He is an expert when it comes to horror, the occult, magic, and I can't wait to get right into it with him when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Lon Milo Duquette with us, and of course, he's a best-selling author, one of the most respected and entertaining writers in the world. He is an award-winning singer, songwriter, recording artist. Very different career. He is an authority on the tarot, the Kabbalah, the ceremonial magic, and has written about the life and works of the controversial English magician Aleister Crowley. He is currently the U.S. Deputy Grand Master of the Ordo Templi Orientis, which is a 100-year-old magical society. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. 2 years later, or almost three, Lon.
Almost three, yes, thank you.
Looking forward to this. Lots have been going on, but I've got to ask you, over the 3 years, what have you been doing?
Oh, I've been really busy, actually. I've written a couple of new books and recorded three new CDs
of my music.
But mostly I've been on the road. I've been doing lots of traveling and lectures and concerts because seems to be a lot of interest in magic.
There sure is. And you love magic.
I do. It's sort of my thing.
How did you get involved in both the magic and the music part?
Well, the music came first, and I was... A songwriter, and like every kid my age, I was in a band and things like that. But when I moved back to California after graduating from high school, I really lucked out and got myself a recording contract, and along with my partner Charlie D. Harris, and so I was really lucky in the music business in the late '60s and early '70s, and. Recorded with CBS and released a couple singles and an album on the Epic label.
What was your biggest song?
Our biggest song was The Word Is Love, and that was our single, and it was off our album, and it made it to number one in quite a few markets in the United States, and our album, Charlie D and Milo, got itself a Billboard spotlight pick, and it looked like we were sort of on our way. But I really wanted to also raise a family, and it was kind of a wild and crazy.
I bet.
Yeah, and so I kind of made a decision: do I want a nice stable family, or do I want this crazy life? And that was really a no-brainer. And along about 1972, when our son was born, I hung up the music business, but I was always fascinated with mysticism and occultism. And I'm sort of a child of the psychedelic '60s, you know.
Yeah.
And and so I figured exploring the mind and consciousness, and that was really the quest that I should be on, rather than the quest for money or measure of fame or anything. And so I got interested in Eastern mysticism, and then Western mysticism, and then finally I ran into the Kabbalah, and then eventually the works of Aleister Crowley, and then that got me into tarot and Kabbalah and all this crazy stuff. And man, passionately study this stuff for about 20 years, you wake up, and most of the people that know as much as you do are already dead.
That's true. That was Crowley as evil as some people say he was?
Well, you don't have to be very evil to be evil in some people's minds. But Crowley was a wild and crazy guy.
There's no doubt.
There's no doubt about it. And I've spent the better part of my adult life studying his works and practicing to the best of my ability, some of his magical teachings. At least half of my public lectures and stuff are about Aleister Crowley, and the two biggest books I've written on him, The Magic of Aleister Crowley and my book on his tarot cards. It's called Understanding Aleister Crowley's Thoth Tarot. And really, for anyone seriously interested in Crowley, the best biography of the man is called Perdurabo, The Life of Aleister Crowley by Dr. Richard Kaczynski. And it's a sane biography. And to truly answer the question, was he evil? you'd really want to dig through that book and go make your own decision. But he was a British poet, a writer and an adventurer and a mountain climber and a magician. And for those that are completely unaware, he was...
He did it all. Jeez.
He really did it all. He was a chess master, too, and a painter. The guy was just incredible. He was born in 1875 and died in 1947. It's really funny. The BBC just recently held a national poll for they wanted people to vote for the 100 greatest Brits of all time. And Aleister Crowley came up number 73. Okay, right before Robert Bruce and right after Henry V, I think. But they're even thinking about putting his face on the 20-pound note. I'll believe that when I see it.
Lon, let me ask you this. Over the last week, there's been this incredible uproar in Detroit, this unveiling of this bizarre-looking Satanistic statue. Have you been following that story?
Well, I haven't been closely following it, and I don't know any of the people involved in it, but I have been sort of following it in the New York Times. But it appears that it's really more of a civil rights story than a spiritual story, because the issue really revolves around ideas of religious freedom and the doctrine of separation.
Oh yeah, that's what they're all pushing.
And the thrust is whether citizens who aren't Christians or Jews should be made to feel like they might not be treated fairly because of their beliefs, in courts and in government decisions and stuff. And most striking example, is that monument of the Ten Commandments in a courthouse, I think, in Oklahoma. And from what I understand, a group of non-Christians on the East Coast believe that if the doctrine of one or two religions are endorsed by government and courts, then all religions, no matter how weird or objectionable, should have that same right. Kind of what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So they formed this organization that they call the Satanic Temple. Now, from what I can gather, it is sort of a generic term,
a little dangerous to dabble with that, though, isn't it?
Well, it's dangerous to dabble with electricity too, but people sometimes we need electricians sometimes. But this group went to considerable expense to commission a monumental statue of Baphomet.
Which is like a goat head, right?
It's a goat-headed, very devilish-looking idol.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think it looks like Satan, whatever Satan is.
And it's on a human body.
And it's on a human body, you know, in the same way that the Hindu god Ganesha is an elephant head, you know, on a human body. Or the Egyptian gods, you know, have bird heads on human bodies and things like that. But I guess basically they're arguing if a monument to the Ten Commandments is allowed to be displayed, then so should, you know, their statue of Baphomet.
So. Well, they did it secretly. They, you know, got several hundred people to attend. But there were some Satanists there, Juan. And,
oh,
you know,
yeah, well, that may be. But from what I've been able to determine after 40 years of rubbing elbows with some of the weirdest people on the planet, I've discovered that Satanism, as we've always been made to believe by Hollywood, Rosemary Baby, Eyes Wide Shut Satanism, really is is in the imagination of people. But there are, of course, nutty, unbalanced people of any persuasion that have no moral compass.
Well, wasn't this Baphomet revered by the Knights Templars?
Yes, and that is very interesting. And I wrote a whole book on it, and I think we talked about it last time, The Key to Solomon's Key.
Yeah.
Where I talk a lot about the Templars and Freemasons and Baphomet. And so Baphomet was the name of the idol that the Knights Templar were accused of worshiping.
And let me describe it to people again.
Okay.
It is a goat's head with huge pointy horns, as you said, a devilish look on a human's body. I don't know whether he's got cloven hoofs or feet.
Yeah.
Is that what he has? Okay.
Yeah.
Because the picture I see, he's got his legs crossed.
Yeah.
Can't see it. And the Knights Templar, of course, who were commissioned by the Catholic Church for a lot of things, right?
Well, yeah. It's pretty interesting, and it's kind of appropriate that a group such as this might use this symbol to make such a sort of sociological statement. The image of Baphomet certainly didn't start out as a symbol of evil or a symbol of the devil.
It sure looks it, though.
It does, but it was a version of an old Gnostic symbol for the supreme being itself. Now, this sounds a little counterintuitive, but it's highly likely that the Knights Templar were influenced by the doctrines of early Christian, Gnostic Christians, who believed that God was so pure, so formless, so holy, so unimaginably beautiful, that any attempt to capture its beauty in an image or a statue or a painting was blasphemy. So they still wanted an object to focus their devotion to. So they came up with all sorts of some really very, very ugly images, which they felt comfortable using as stand-ins for God Almighty. And some of the earliest representations of even the Virgin Mary were these Gnostic images of a very, very shaggy-looking old goat. And it's kind of odd logic, but that's what they did. And so for the Templars, Baphomet didn't represent anything anti-God or anti-Christian or satanic or demonic, but it did symbolize their own doctrines, which at the time were secretly very anti-Church of Rome.
And we've got a picture, by the way, of the Baphomet on our Twitter feed. If
okay.
folks want to see that, yeah. that little creature. But it's strange, Lon. I got to tell you, the whole thing's weird.
Well, it is, and it was meant to be provocative. These people meant it to be provocative, but
well, they succeeded there.
They sure did, and the boy, they must have spent quite a bit of money because it is quite a massive object. So
it sure is. It's not cheap.
I don't think they're probably going to be able to get it in front of a courthouse anytime soon. But
they got the publicity they were looking for.
They did, and the point that they tried to make was one we should all be at least thinking about as we try to be, you know, sensitive to people that believe other things and even people that believe nothing. We're all citizens, and we should all feel at least the same comfortableness when we need to go to court, you know. So,
Lon, I want to get into magic and some of these other issues in a moment when we come back. But tell me a little bit more about your music. That fascinates me.
Well, I'd given the music up for almost 30 years. I didn't even own an instrument, and I truly just turned my attention to making a living and studying and writing practicing my spiritual endeavors, and just about a little over 6 years ago now, one of my members of Monday Night Class found out about my old music career and brought in one of my old albums and for me to autograph and thought it was just a shame I didn't have a guitar, and I'd been plunking around on a ukulele just to relax, and so one Christmas morning there was a there was a guitar. So I thought it'd be fun just to see if I could play guitar again.
I bet you could. It's like riding a bicycle, isn't it?
It is like riding a bicycle. As a matter of fact, just after a couple of weeks, I was playing guitar differently and better than I'd ever played in my life, I guess, 30 years listening to music.
By the way, this Sunday, I'm going to be out of town, but this Sunday night, you're going to be at the Viper Room in Hollywood?
The Viper
Darn,
Room.
Darn, I would have loved to have seen that.
Oh, well, I hope I'll be back again soon for you to see that.
That is super. Lon, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to talk about magic. What is this fascination with magic? But what's your definition of magic compared to what Lon's definition is? There could be two different things. Lon's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's also a noted author. He's got a couple other book projects out there. One is called Homemade Magic, Low Magic, It's All in Your Head, The Wiser Book of Horror and the Occult, and so much more. Next hour, we'll open up your phones and let you make the call, as we will take your calls on magic, mysticism, the occult, you name it, we'll have it right here on Coast to Coast AM. Beyond belief, it is a very rapidly growing television program that we stream, and you can watch it. Look at all the past programs. There's a 99 cents deal, that's right, that you can take advantage of. I don't know who that other voice was. I'm being possessed. Help me. I'm interviewing Lon Milo Duquette, and this is what's happening to me. But go to beyondbelief.com. You can sign up for it, watch as many programs as you want, and you'll really enjoy it. Beyondbelief.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast Magic. Lon Milo Duquette with us. Lon, magic, when you hear the word today, most people think of a magician playing with cards and doing some David Copperfield type illusions. That's not the magic you're thinking about, is it?
No. No, but the root word, magi, M-A-G-I, is the same. And the stage hypnotists or stage magicians, prestidigitators and illusionists, like to capitalize on the mystique of the ancient magi that were said to be able to perform miracles and things. But I'm really talking about the serious spiritual art form that goes all the way back to ancient Babylon. Mm-hmm. And the Magi. Those are the same characters that the New Testament talks about that we call the three wise men, the three Magi. Those were the names for Chaldean or Babylonian astrologers. So it's magic is sort of the Western tradition that at least traditionally harkens back to the ancient Babylonians. And that has evolved over the centuries through other spiritual sciences, including the Greek Kabbalah, the Hebrew Kabbalah, or the Jewish Kabbalah, and this is really the source of what the Greeks would call the Hermetic sciences. This is where astrology comes from. This is where alchemy comes from, and it is sort of uniquely European and Middle Eastern in origin, and so it's a serious kind of way of training yourself to look at the world. It's an interesting way to focus your intent, literally using intent as if it were a power or an energy itself, this same as electricity would be.
Was magic of that era, Lon, way gone back, was that considered dark, evil, or not?
No. As a matter of fact, it was really the status quo of spiritual practice. It wasn't considered evil. The Babylonians, in particular, used what they even called evil spirits to do good things. What they meant by evil spirits were they could be evil if they weren't properly controlled, in the same way as or they could be dangerous if they weren't properly controlled, in the same way that heavy machinery is dangerous if you leave the engine running and jump off.
Yeah.
And but they always associated them quite neutrally. The tradition of King Solomon building his temple with the use of evil spirits, that was not a weird idea in the Eastern mind. What he meant by evil spirits, there's all these blind forces in nature that are just kind of running amok and expressing themselves down the paths of least resistance, and it takes a wise magician to actually harness those powers and say, look, I'm going to put you to work to build this temple of God. And it was always considered, well, this is not unholy, this is not evil. You're not going to get in trouble, any more trouble doing this than you'd get in trouble going to the market every day and bartering for your food. Where it started to turn sour is when and I hate to blame everything on the Catholic Church, because God knows the
There are some great priests in the
absolutely.
Catholic Church. I'm Catholic, and I would admit that. However, they did screw up for a lot of things,
They
didn't they?
screwed and they screwed this one up royally, and it ended up tinkering with the mental health of Western civilization. And this idea that they made the concept of God so small that it could have an opposite, and that's sort of unheard of from the mystical holy people of the past. I mean, God is so big, it can't have an opposite. It's so good, there can't be an evil that is opposite. It's a good that swallows up little goods and evils.
How would you use magic today, Lon?
Well, magic today is almost used in the same way as you would a doctor would administer some nutritional supplements or something to clear up obstructions or imbalances in your system. Face it, none of us are completely happy. Okay.
I'm delighted.
We've got major problems.
But you know what? That premise is something that we've been working on, a different kind of a show, about America's unhappiness with everything. And when I say America, I'm talking about people.
Right.
They're not happy.
They're not happy. Okay. And it's not like, an example of classic use of a classic magical technique, the summoning of a spirit to do a chore for you. This is right out of Mickey Mouse.
Sure.
You know.
Mop the floors.
Mop the floors, exactly. And but the example would be the magician actually comes to terms with the fact that he or she absolutely needs something in their life. They need a particular thing to turn around. They're not sure why they're not getting what they need to get out of life, while they're not fulfilling what they need to fulfill in life. And they've actually come to that psychological point, I'm lacking something. I'm lacking that, and I would like that to change. I would like me to change to get rid of that flaw. And so the medieval magicians would say, okay, that flaw is a demon. And that demon could be working for me, but right now he's working against me. Okay? So I'm going to conjure that demon that is my problem, and I'm going to give him new orders. I'm going to make him say, yes, I'm working for you. I recognize you. Yeah, I should be working for you. Okay, I'll start working for you, And then the magician sends it off. Okay, I want to see you change this situation. And I want you to do it expeditiously, but I want you to do it without hurting me, my family, my friends, the fragile ecosystem, whatever. I want you to do it safely. Because if you, let's say your problem was you needed a whole bunch of money, and you said, well, bring me the money as fast as you can. And of course, the fastest way is you get in an accident, cut your arm off, and the insurance gives you that money.
Yeah, or somebody that you love dies and gives you an insurance policy.
Correct, the old monkey's paw story.
Yep.
Kind of thing. But the point is, the energy that you're working with is really an aspect of consciousness. And I know that it's far romantic to think about these things as spiritual ghost-like smoky entities living in hell someplace that you conjure up. But in actuality, everything in our life is an aspect of consciousness. Just listen to the quantum physicists, okay, on NOVA. It just blows my mind every time I watch one of these NOVA programs, because these quantum physicists are talking like ancient magicians. Time and space ain't what they used to be. It's all a matter of consciousness. That was Crowley's big message, was that consciousness is the vehicle of existence, the reality, everyday reality, magical reality, time and space, existence itself, are all aspects of consciousness. And the magician consciously tinkers with consciousness. And he does it in a dramatic art form way that uses the idea of angels, spirits, as metaphors, as tangible, almost hands-on visible metaphors for these pieces, these chunks, these modules of consciousness, and deals with them that way. I know it's not as sexy and as romantic to think of these things in such psychological and quantum physics-y terms, but basically that's what it really is. That's why it works. That's why it works mysteriously, seemingly in a way that is not bound by the same limitations of space and time, because consciousness is bigger than space and time as we know it. The ancient magicians sort of stumbled on how that they could make this work, but modern magicians are actually now starting to understand what's going on, and they're using the vocabulary of quantum physics to explain it to themselves.
Lon, can you get hurt dabbling in magic?
Yeah, well, you could get hurt. Yes, you can get hurt dabbling in cooking. As a matter of fact, you can hurt yourself far more easily in the kitchen than you can in the magical temple.
Well, yeah, especially if you're trying to swallow a knife or something.
Right? Yeah, well, if you're even trying to cut a potato, my gosh. But you can hurt yourself. You are playing with or tinkering or using aspects of your own consciousness, aspects of your own sanity, and if you are a bit unbalanced, if you are mentally ill, if you're still harboring a great deal of self fear and self-loathing, and if you still have hang-ups, magic needs to be approached very carefully, because it's a science that is dealing with aspects of your own sanity. And so, of course, but you can also, you know, get hurt crossing the street, but nevertheless, you and me every day go out and cross those streets. So I would not do magic because you're afraid. As a matter of fact, in my new book, Low Magic, that we were talking about earlier, I start my first whole chapter is don't be afraid. The worst thing that you can do with your life, the worst thing you can do with your magic, is to be afraid. That fear is what opens the door to all sorts of nastiness. And when you're dealing with a spiritual technique or a spiritual science, fear is the first thing you want to get rid of. The the worst that's ever happened to me is not bad enough for me to even complain about.
Well, a lot of people, though, will fear everything, Lon.
That is absolutely true, and for them, magic is probably not for them. But I would ask them if they don't understand it, to at least have an open enough mind not to mindlessly condemn it.
Yeah. Now, I want to get into tarot cards next hour. We'll take phone calls about this, but back to Aleister Crowley for just a second. He was a weird person, but some people thought he was a spy. Was he?
Yeah, it really looks like he was. You know, for years, it was always rumored because he was accused of being a traitor because he wrote pro-German propaganda prior to World War I. But and it's funny, you know, because last time we were talking about John Dee, you know, Queen Elizabeth I's court magician, and he was a spy for Elizabeth. You know, he's got a you know, a whole exhibit at the International Spy Museum up for John Dee. But it really does look like Crowley was a spy. And there's a guy named Richard Spence. Okay, now he's not an occultist at all. He's not a magician. But he is an award-winning journalist and a historian. And a few years back, he wrote a best-selling book called Trust No One, The Secret World of Sidney Reilly. And Sidney Reilly was the model that James Bond was based on.
Uh-huh.
He was like a World War I and pre-World War I English spy. And PBS or BBC did a mini-series on him starring Sam Neill called Reilly, Ace of Spies. This guy really knows his stuff. And just recently, he's written another book on British spies, and it's called Secret Agent 666, Aleister Crowley, British Intelligence and the Occult. Okay?
Huh.
And it's and it's really good. And
he died at 70, right? Aleister.
No, he died in 1947.
No, I'm good. He was 70 years old, wasn't he?
Oh, 72.
72.
Yeah.
He was a creepy-looking guy.
He got a little creepy-looking, but he loved to take creepy pictures.
He was a creepy person. We won't get into that, but he was, wasn't he?
He was even more expensive. Eccentric than you or I would probably.
Oh, don't put me in that category, Lon.
You and I probably wouldn't have been extremely comfortable around him, at least some of the during part of his life.
All right, well, let's come back. Final hour to go here, Lon, and we'll take phone calls on magic. And also, I want to talk with you about the tarot cards, how they work, and why they work. We'll be back.